Hi, this is Jill Murphy from Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus. The Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus podcast provides the latest industry news and information, thought leader insights, clinical updates, patient counseling tools, and innovative solutions for the everyday practice and business of pharmacy. Before we begin with this week's episode, do you know where Charles R. Walgreen Sr. used to work before he got his start in the pharmacy field? We will reveal the answer at the end of the episode. In this week's episode, we will be discussing the latest COVID-19 vaccine updates and what researchers still need to know with Michael Haydock, Senior Director of Cardiovascular, Metabolic, and Infectious Diseases Content at Informa Pharma Intelligence. With the COVID-19 vaccine comes a lot of uncertainty and questions, such as the long-term effects and durability of the protection of these vaccines. According to Haydock, there are a few priorities that researchers are looking at, with durability being a main focus.
Yeah, I think durability is definitely the primary question. I'd say there's four overall, the first being durability over the long term, and inevitably by its nature, that's only something you can investigate over time. It's not something you can look at within the time frame of clinical trials that they had for emergency use authorization. So for the clinical trial data we have at the moment, that's a median of 9 weeks of follow-up. So that's about 2 months or so that we know these vaccines are protected for. What people will be wanting to do in the longer term is monitoring antibody levels in particular over time. The hope is that they'll last for at least a year, ideally. We don't know. No one knows the answer, but I think that's the hope. They should last around a year or so by just trending out how the data is looking at the moment into the future. What they're ultimately wanting to be doing is monitoring those antibody levels in people who've been vaccinated over time and monitoring those people to see when they become reinfected, so when they're known to be vulnerable again. And once you've done that for several hundreds or thousands of people, then you can start to correlate antibody levels with your level of protection, and you can hopefully identify a minimum threshold of antibodies that you need to be protected, and that will help inform any future strategies as to when a booster dose might be required, for example. So hopefully at least a year, but we'll see how it goes.
Long-term safety, preventing asymptomatic effects, and safety and efficacy in children are the other concerns that Haydock highlights with the COVID-19 vaccine rollout.
Yeah, so the other one is long-term safety. Again, something you can only work out over time. That's partially complicated by the fact that people who were in the placebo arms in the clinical trials are now largely being unblinded because it's not considered ethical to withhold the vaccine from them. They were high risk in the first place. That was the entire point in the studies, was to enroll high risk people. So it becomes harder to do in a controlled setting. But the other thing with just more general rollout of these into real world experience, you might also start picking up some of the very rare adverse events that you wouldn't necessarily pick up in the context of a trial. So the trials are about 30,000 for Moderna and about 44,000 for Pfizer. But if you have an adverse event, let's say that happens in 1 in 50,000 people, then you're unlikely to pick that up in any scale in a clinical trial to be able to say, yes, that's definitely due to the vaccine, as opposed to due to chance. So that's the second one. The third one, which is really important for the population as a whole, is whether these vaccines are capable of preventing asymptomatic infection. So they're approved based on their ability to prevent symptomatic infection and severe manifestations, so hospitalizations. And that's great, because if you can do that, that's perfect. It's exactly what we want from a vaccine. But also you want to see if the vaccine is capable of stopping people being infected subclinically. So at the moment, all we know is that these vaccines stop symptomatic infection. We don't know yet if they stop someone being infected but not showing symptoms. The problem with vaccines that only do that, they don't give what's called sterilizing immunity, is someone who's asymptomatically infected could still be harboring the virus and pass it on to the community. Whereas if you can stop infection completely, that's the ideal, and that has important implications, because then you're protecting people who aren't vaccinated, either just because they haven't had the chance or they can't be for whatever reason. And it just reduces transmission of the virus as a whole. And then probably the last one is we don't know about the safety and efficacy of these vaccines in children just yet, but they're lower clinical priority just because the risk of severe disease or death is negligible in people aged under 18 unless they have some other risk factor.
We are taking a short break to celebrate pharmacy hero Monique Sanders for her work at Script Source Pharmacy in Pearland, Texas. As the owner of the pharmacy, Sanders not only greets every patient with a smile, but also goes above and beyond to accommodate their needs. During the COVID-19 pandemic, Sanders has ensured consistency in business operations and customer satisfaction. She often works with patients to schedule prescription pickups or arrange delivery services, and she also works late to ensure every patient has their medications on time. Jennifer Derzanowski, RN, said of Sanders, "As she is a cancer survivor, she knows how scary a time like this can be for very sick and even the healthiest patients, and has remained open for business." If you would like to nominate a pharmacist or pharmacy staff member as a pharmacy hero, email the address in our description with your nominee. And now, a quick word from the Fit Pharmacist, Adam Martin, on how to develop your personal brand.
Hello, my friends. My name is Adam Martin, founder of The Fit Pharmacist. Becoming named the most influential pharmacist across the profession of pharmacy, I want to take everything that I've learned in my career and share it to help you make a breakthrough in your personal brand as a coach to help you clarify your why, find your ideal niche, and script your brand. It's the essential foundation in our extremely competitive pharmacy profession, and it's what you need to succeed. Because the foundation of your brand is you, which is why I'm here to help you dispense your full potential with my series of snippets I've created for you, your personal brand playlist. Track number 4 on the personal brand playlist is the fast forward button, because we're going to share here 6 strategies that you can put your results in faster mode. Faster, F-A-S-T-E-R. We are going to break down what each of those letters means so that you can get simple strategies that work and will help you fast forward your progress. So looking at faster, the first letter is F. That means forget. This is your don't do list. Now, as y'all know, there are a lot of distractions that are not aligned with your brand message or lane of focus. The suggestion is simple. Stay in your lane because it'll get you to your destination faster. The second letter in faster, A, is act. You have to put in the work. This does not mean repost random content on your social media platforms. While that's not necessarily bad, but if you instead act by digging into your expertise to learn and grow yourself, become better just 1% every day, it will allow you to strive for progress instead of perfection. And through that process, you'll be able to create content of value that your audience wants and becomes expectant of you to deliver. The third letter in faster is S, which stands for state. And I want to ask y'all a question. Are you aware that your growth is state dependent? Now, I ain't asking if you live in Pennsylvania, Ohio, or Florida. I'm talking about your emotions, because they have a big play in this and are influenced by both your thoughts, that being your mental health, and your physical fitness. If you fuel both, they will have profound effects on the quality of ideas and work that you create. The next letter is T, which means teach, because the best way to learn is to teach. I mean, here I am sharing this stuff with you guys. It's not only helping you, but it's helping me. Because if you're looking to grow your skills, why not share your newfound knowledge with others? You win by learning it, they win by hearing it, and those that they serve will win too. It's a triple win. Fifth letter is E. That means enter. If you don't make time, you will not make results. So if you enter your scheduled time on a calendar by scheduling your time to create content and to brainstorm ideas, that is how you will guarantee that happens on a consistent basis. And the final letter is R, which stands for review. Make sure that you have a big picture goal with your content strategy, that being your macro view, and that each content piece you make is relevant to your overall brand, the content being your micro view. For those of you that are in the Script Your Brand Mastermind that I run, you know that I cite this tip as roast before you post, because it can save your brand integrity. So there you have it, the faster letter-by-letter way to improve your results and impact your brand has. If you want more content like this for simple strategies on how to blow up your brand and create the name that you're looking to have impact in your career, follow me on Instagram at TheFitPharmacist for more ideas like this so that you can script your brand.
Now back to the show. As for the future of vaccines and the population of children, Haydock says the earliest that pediatric approvals will be looked at could be in quarter three of this year, since they are considered a more low-risk group compared to other populations.
Yeah, so Pfizer and Moderna are both conducting trials. At the moment, I think they're only going down to 12 years for now. That's pretty typical of the way the process works in pediatric patients. So you can't go straight down to very young children. You have to do what's called age de-escalation studies. So you start with the older children. Once you're happy that your vaccine is safe and immunogenic in that population, you can go progressively lower. So at the moment, they're looking at 12 to 18 years. As I say, in future, they'll go younger than that. At the earliest, we're probably looking at pediatric approvals in maybe late Q3 of this year. So it won't be for probably at least 6 months or so yet. Again, clinically, they're not that important a risk group because the risk of severe disease is very low. But anyone who has kids will know that if you send your children to school or to nursery, they come back carrying all sorts of infections, all the ones known under the sun. So it's going to be important in terms of preventing transmission in the broader community to vaccinate those people, not so much for themselves, but for the community benefit.
Other vaccines in the pipeline include those from AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson, according to Haydock, which have different benefits to help vaccinate more people safely.
Yeah, so in the US, we should have AstraZeneca's vaccine coming out this quarter. They've got an ongoing US trial that should read out this quarter. We also have two other vaccines that will be very important for two reasons. Firstly, for increasing supply. So we've got Novavax and Johnson & Johnson. So Johnson & Johnson has adenoviral vector vaccine, similar to AstraZeneca's one, uses a slightly different virus, but the mechanism and the general rationale is the same. So that should read out this month, and hopefully they can get emergency approval in February. The really important thing about the Johnson & Johnson one is it's single dose. So that's both potentially a huge benefit in terms of the logistics of rolling a vaccine out because you don't have to recall patients for a second dose. It's just a lot faster. They can also produce up to a billion doses a year is what they're guiding for, which is quite, again, important increasing supply. The risk, of course, is that it might not be as effective after a single dose. So they're the company that has taken that gamble. It may well be that it provides some protection, maybe a little bit less than you get with two doses, and maybe they're also doing a two-dose study as well, but that'll read out a bit later. So it may well be that it's not fantastic, but it's good enough to get approval, and then maybe you can follow up with a booster dose later. Novavax is the other company. I think they're guiding for about 2 billion doses a year is going to be their production. And again, that's two dose, but it can be stored in normal fridge temperatures. And that's the same, that's true for Johnson & Johnson, because one of the drawbacks of Pfizer at the moment is it requires ultra-cold storage, and that's been a problem with the rollout of the vaccine.
Haydock believes the process of distributing vaccines across the nation will speed up soon due to an increase in funding and realizing the manpower needed to get them out efficiently.
I think one of the hurdles that people ran into was just underestimating the manpower that's required for just the sheer number of people who have to be vaccinated. As I mentioned, for Pfizer, again, there's the logistical hurdle that in more rural areas, and smaller pharmacies, well, most pharmacies, to be honest, won't have ultra cold storage facilities. So that means that people are often having to travel to hospital or centralized centers to get this, which is quite inconvenient. For most people, I think they prefer just to be able to go to a pharmacy. So that's where, as we get more vaccines like Moderna's one that you can store at normal refrigerated temperatures, that will become a lot easier to distribute it to more far flung areas where you don't have to go to hospital. And as I said, hiring the manpower as well, just to do this, if you're primary care physician, for example, you can't just immediately clear all of your schedule. You'll have other patients with non-COVID conditions that you need to cater for as well. So primary care physicians, pharmacists to some extent also will be very important in just speeding this up as we get more people in place.
Did you figure out our fun fact of the week? Charles R. Walgreen Sr. used to work at a shoe factory before he got his start in the pharmacy field. Walgreen Sr. used to work at a shoe factory where he lost part of his finger in a mishap. Later, he became a pharmacist's apprentice before becoming a pharmacist. Walgreen used to work for a Chicago pharmacist who in due course retired and gave him the chance to buy out the store in 1901. He bought a second drugstore in 1909, incorporated 9 Walgreens stores by 1919, and launched the 100th store in Chicago in 1926. After him, his son, Charles Walgreens Jr., continued building the chain to 6,000 stores. Thanks for listening to Pharmacy Focus. Stay tuned for next episode, where we will be joined by another key opinion leader in the pharmacy space.